My name is Martin Machito, from the department. With me is Martin Machito. Okay. My name is Martin Machito. I'm a DDG in the Department of Housing. And with me is Mr. Massini and Mr. Thatcher. Mr. Thatcher is the one who's going to lead us in the discussion. Over to you, Mr. Thatcher.
Morning, Chair, and morning, fellow members. Just like one correction, the gentleman next to me is from Gomajulu. Chair, I just wanted to give you a short background to this bill. As I think all the members know, the original Act was promulgated in 1998. And since then, we've come across a whole lot of interpretational problems, as well as problems relating to the implementation of this Act. Now, I think that the main problem which the NHBRC had, which is the regulating authority here, was that a lot of many builders were trying to get out of it, and this was detrimental to the building, the residential building industry in particular. Just for example, one of the loopholes was the fact that the Act as it now stands talks about owner builders being exempt from the provisions of the Act. Now, it didn't take people too long to realize that they could get away with all the fees if they decided to become an owner builder. Once they just built their house, often without even anyone knowing about it. And then sometimes problems were experienced within a short period. And the NHBRC would then be asked to intervene. And they couldn't intervene because, you know, this was an owner builder. So well, what we have to do is really clear up the whole question of the definition of owner builder. And what we have said now is you'll see from, I'll come to this now, that the provision in the amendment says that owner-builders must apply for exemption. So they will then have to prove through the council that they fall within the category as stipulated in the bill. So we feel that this will definitely be a better controlling measure so that a lot of these poor people whose houses start cracking and that they will be covered by the Act. And another thing we've done is, and this goes very closely to what we just said, is that we've now made provision for a conveyancer who transfers a property which is bonded to make sure that before the transfer and bond documents are lodged, that they have applied for this certificate or enrolled their house, and that is covered by the NHBRC. So we've added the conveyancer as a means of trying to enforce the provisions of this Act. And apart from that, there are quite a few, I would say, implementational amendments. For example, our minister was becoming totally inundated with all sorts of applications for exemption and otherwise, and now we've said that those type of applications can be dealt with by NHBRC because they're the ones who are technically competent to assess each application, and that the minister would then pay, I would call it a rule whereby if anyone was aggrieved from the NHBRC decision, well, then they could appeal to the minister on those grounds. And I think I'll just go through the regulations very briefly. I think that those are the major ones, but there are a few others which I think I will try and take you through as we go along. Background, the bill seeks to rectify certain interpretation and implementation problems encountered since the promulgation of the Act, that's 95 of 1998. The bill addresses the issue of so-called owner builders and clarifies the application of the Act with regard to the category of builders. And I think the members would have the copy of the draft bill before you, but certainly to look at section 1 and then A, as you mentioned, section 1 of Act 95, 1998, a home builder means a person who carries on the business of a home builder or an owner builder who has not applied for exemption in terms of section 10A. And there are a few exceptions to this which we'll come across later. Owner builders are persons who build homes for occupation by themselves and as such do not necessarily need protection against shoddy workmanship by building. So the rationale behind this is that if you're building your own home, you're not going to build a shoddy one. And that's what they have decided. And I think this was the original intention of Parliament in 1998. Yeah. Allowance will make for late enrollment and non-declared late enrollment of housing. Such being housed by the National Home Builders Association Council, after construction has already started, as against the desired prerequisite that houses must be enrolled with the council prior to the commencement of construction. Madam Chair, we as the Department of Housing and the NHBRC had many complaints from the likes of building societies or banks, I should say, the advanced mortgage loans, these builders just went ahead and started building houses, and then somewhere along the line an inspector would drive past and see that it hadn't been enrolled, and then the owner would have to apply for late enrollment. And this wasn't provided for in the original Act, and we have felt that it must be a standard part of the Act, which we have not done in terms of the amendment, and that will mean that that if an owner, for any reason, doesn't comply with the provisions and only applies for enrollment when he has already started construction, well then he pays a penalty, and the NHBRC inspectors will go out then and assess the situation, and they might call for further evidence as to the soundness of the foundations that is difficult to detect after construction has commenced. Although these issues have in the past been dealt with in regulations, they are not defined in the Act, nor does the Act contain specific provisions relating to them, which is what we have now rectified. This amendment bill further provides for insertion of definitions of late enrollment and non-declared late enrollment and makes specific provision therefore in clause 14A of the bill, which I won't take you through, but that will rectify the position of the two categories of late enrollment. And then the definitions for national code and PHP projects have also been inserted as they are contained in standard provisions proposed in the bill. I think that is self-explanatory. PHP is the people's housing process, and any house which falls under the PHP project is exempt from the provisions of the Act. In Section 7 of the Act, dealing with measures that the Council and the Minister may prescribe, has been amended in order to include measures pertaining to late enrollment, non-declared late enrollment, and late enrollment fees, which is what I've alluded to before. And then a new Section 10 has been inserted to enable owner builders to apply for exemption from Section 10, that's the Section dealing with registration of home builders, and Section 14, enrollment of the Act. So this raises the streamlines of the provisions of Section 10 in compliance with Section 14, 14A of the Act. Section 14A, you'll see, refers to late Romans as well as non-declared late Romans. Then if one goes to section 17 of the Act, the original Act, or the current Act as it stands, does not cover roof leaks, which was a problem in many areas which had substantial rainfall. Now the Act has been amended to extend the cover. You'll recall that the basic cover is 5 years, which includes all major structural defects. What has been found is that when a roof leaks, it does tend to lead to a lot of damage inside the house. And I thought that that should be covered, and that has been done for a period of 2 years, which is normal. I think most builders without the MHBRC tend to get one piece of roof leak for a year, but we have made it 2 years. And then provisions also been made under certain circumstances to make payments to the housing consumer in full and final settlement of a claim. The council has found that a lot of members, of builders, sorry, and owners have disputes along the line about what they consider to be a major structural defect or a major defect, and the council has on many occasions refused payments, and this matter gets dragged out, and some matters have been in dispute for 2, 3, 4 years, and the council thought that it would be necessary to somehow get a way out of this, and that's why we've made this provision for a full and time settlement of a claim. In other words, if the NHBRC sees fit and there is some defect and they have an owner who is unsatisfied about the builder which might be appointed to rectify the defect, they can then give him an amount in full and time settlement which he will acknowledge in writing. And this will mean that then he can provide his own builder or do the work himself for the compensation which has been paid to him. What we've also done is increase the list of contraventions in the Act of Constituted Offences as set out in section 21 of the Act. And one of the offences that has now been made an offence is to ensure that to ensure the duty of a conveyancing to include the section 18 duty to show the home builder is registered before change the registration of bonds. So if an attorney if a conveyancer fails to do this, he then will be liable of an offence in terms of the Act. And section 22 of the Act is also being amended by insertion of a new subsection which enables persons who are aggrieved by a decision of the council in terms of section 29 to lodge an appeal with the minister. You'll recall that I said earlier that this power was with the minister, and she was totally inundated with applications for exemption, about which she did not have all the technical details. So that is now with the council, and if any person has a grievance against the decision, well then they can apply to appeal to the minister. And this is in the fifth case of amendment to section 29, which deals with exemptions. And section 29 is also being amended to allow the council to grant or refuse applications for exemptions, simply in the power of the minister, the safeguard in the form of an appeal process is, however, built into section 22 of the Act in order to ensure exemptions are not refused unreasonably. So if a person has agreed that the refusal is unreasonable, there is this appeal process, which I think is relevant to all similar tribunals of this nature. And finally, the person consulted, we published the bill for public comment on the 25th of August last year. And the person's comment was sent personally to the MHBRC, that's the regulatory authority, the Banking Associations of South Africa, all major banks, and the National Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, together with Agriculture and Land Affairs, provincial local government. I think that 9 provincial housing departments should be... No, we did send it to all 9, sorry. We ended up on the 5. SAGA, the Mask of Bones Association, the Clothing Industry Federation of South Africa, and South African Coffee Owners Association. And then written comments we received from, I think they should be inspired to behind the problem. So we do feel that we have consulted pretty widely. We have been in constant communication with the NHBRC who regulates the tax, and we are happy that it addresses all the problems which the NHBRC has been have tried to deal with over the years since the Act came into operation. I'd like to add, Madam Chair, that we already done draft of regulations which actually give effect to some of most of these amendments, but we advise or said your advisors that we can't submit those until the Act or the bill has been dealt with by both houses, National Assembly and the CSP. So very soon after this Act, if it is approved, goes through, we will submit regulations to this council for committee for the consideration as well. As I say, these have been drafted and they might have to be amended in light of what happened during the debating process in the committee. Thank you, Chair. If there are any questions, I'll be happy to try and answer them.
Chair, the only thing I can add is that NHBRC has been thoroughly consulted on this issue, and they are quite happy with the way things are.
Nothing to add. I just one comment. The statute is that the rupee would be 2 years, but in the act and the bill on page 5, clause 8, paragraph A, these 12 months might be a mistake. I'm not sure if it is going to have to amend it to bring it, if it's approved by the committee, to bring it up to 24 months.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm just going to run through the presentation where I've made notes. The first one is the allowance for late enrollment. To my knowledge, that is already happening. I mean, if you look at the NHBRC annual report, generally there are report backs on late enrollment, the fees that were charged or that were received, etc. The concern I've got, and I've looked briefly while the presentation was done, I've looked briefly at the amendments, proposed amendments. And it says, for example, that the builder must satisfy NHBRC as to the integrity of the work done already. My concern is very often, I mean, if the foundations have been cast, whether it's enforced or not, they may be able to provide written proof that reinforcement was required. But how would NHBRC satisfy themselves that the reinforcement was actually put in? And if the foundation is faulty, then the rest of the structure, the integrity, is in question. So I believe they letting themselves wide open to claims in that particular regard, and it needs to be addressed. Obviously, other matters that can be inspected after the builder has started and they then apply for enrollment, you know, that is fairly straightforward. But something that is not seen, that cannot be seen by the eye. You cannot uncover, even if you uncover the foundation, you cannot see whether the enforcing is correct. So that's the problem I have with that particular, although like I say, they have been doing it already. The next question I have is, they talk about regulations that are not defined in the Act, and it's now the Act is trying to address it. How does the regulations that currently exist differ from the way it's being tried to be prescribed by the Act now? Is there any difference between the past regulation and wanting to put it into the Act, or is it the same thing? Then the question about PHP projects being exempt. That was initially the case, as far as my understanding. But since, and I'm not sure whether, certainly over the last 3-4 years, Chairperson, as we've been going around, we've heard that PHP projects should be subject to NHBRC. Now we are being told that this act intends to exempt them completely. And I mean, we've seen the quality of houses in the PHP projects as well, and I think they should be subject to NHBRC enrollment. Then the other thing that I just want some information on, I've been, as you know, Chairperson, actively involved in a number of issues between builders and the NHBRC. And this full and final settlement of a claim has come up in the past, where, for example, the quoted damages by contractors appointed by NHBRC may be in the region of 700,000, particularly because it dragged on over a period of 2 years and the problem has just gotten worse. And they have indicated that they will make a full and final settlement of the claim to a maximum value. In the past, it's been 500,000, I believe. Do we make provision for a cap in this amendment, or do we leave it up to the, is it spelled out in the regulations? Or what is the situation in a situation like that? Then one last comment, Chairperson. The minister is there to deal with exemptions. We now propose that NHBRC deal with them, and that the minister only deal with it with appeals. Part of the reason is that, and I agree, that the minister doesn't necessarily have that expertise, although she should have it in the department. Now, if she doesn't have the expertise to deal with the exemption, where's the expertise going to come from to deal with the appeal? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Sir Patrick. I just come in this process of inspection. Everything they have always been, not that they are going to implement them now, but these houses were falling even before they were occupied. I don't know whether it is between the inspectors or the contractors, but there's something wrong. They are falling apart. Whether the inspectors are not doing their job or the contractors are not doing their job, but I think we need to set find out about that thing. Before the houses are occupied, they're falling apart. And secondly, the provincial housing department used to say the housing projects were not completed on time because the contractors, the emission contractors, were unable to finish in time. I just want to know who is to blame. If the housing project, the housing department blames the emission contractors, and who do we blame? Where do we put the blame? To the people, to the contractors, to the housing department? And how is this all going to be implemented?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll deal with the first member's query. The first one was this allowance for late enrollment. I agree that it has been it is being implemented to some extent by the regulations, and I think that the problem here is that you know, they've got to satisfy that the MHBRC must satisfy themselves that you know, this work has been done properly. And I think that we receive quite a lot of challenges from people who are wondering, you know, how they can rectify the problem, particularly where there's a late enrollment and can't inspect and all that sort of thing. And really, this has been very difficult, and we hope that that the more that people know about this, and I think we have embarked on a campaign with all contractors the NHBRC has to ensure that their houses are enrolled before construction. I think this addresses the second speaker's concern as well, because you really, to have a proper regulatory authority. You have to have rules, in this case the Act and the regulations under the Act. And really, if they don't go about it properly, then the system is going to break down. And I think this happened a lot. And people were very concerned, particularly those who were forced to pay additional amounts because of late enrollment. And they will say, well, how can we pay these massive fees which you want us to pay for late enrollment when it doesn't appear in the Act? In other words, there wasn't an overarching provision in the Act to cater for the specific thing. And we've been told on several occasions that you can't legislate by regulation. So no matter what you did to the regulation, they were still challengeable. And a lot of people just take that point, you know, that why must we be penalized when it's not even a provision in the Act? And I think the state law advisors would agree with us. We've had problems like this before, particularly when the original Act went through in 1998. As far as the regulation is not the primary Act, it definitely isn't the same as the new regulations will be different from the old ones. And that will specifically, protect the MHPRC, because it will be in the Act and there will be regulations under that Act to control the situation. I think that the new regulations will definitely boost the powers of the MHPRC as far as late enrollment is concerned. And as far as PhD projects being exempt from concern, I understand the position of PhD is specifically for those people who want to or need to build their own houses, and there's a whole process involved. In other words, you can't just build a house without any training or knowledge which you need to acquire in order to build a house. And that was, there are a lot of building centers around the place where people not only get their materials and costs, but they also get detailed training to exactly how to go about it. And there are inspectors, I understand, in the PhD process. So, you know, it would be unfair to burden them with what those consider to be fairly high costs for registration and enrolling when they're actually doing the work themselves. And in terms of the definition of owner-builder, we find that the PhD be qualified. And then the fourth query which you had was the full and final settlement. I think what depends on these debates in this committee will determine if there should be a cap that is necessary. Because it can be exorbitant, as you said, you know, it can be 500,000 rand, it can be R1 million, and not many people, whoever they are, can actually pay out that amount of money, which is sometimes a great deal more than the cost of the house. And that is because the house will probably have to be demolished and rebuilt. So yes, we acknowledge that there are going to be possibly high claims, but we feel that these will be the exception to the rule. Normally the claims are reasonably minor, and by that I mean, you know, they're confined to roof leaks, cracked walls and that, which is often foundation problems. Foundations that have to be strengthened or reinforced as well. And so that is an ongoing problem with the NHBRC workers. I'm not sure about the capping, whether it will be in the regulations, but we will certainly note the point and try and deal with it at that stage. And then, as far as the minister and exemptions are concerned, if a person is agreed by the ruling of the NHBRC, as far as the exemptions are concerned, the minister will certainly appoint her own advisors, technical advisors, to see whether that ruling is fair or not. So yes, we may not have all the expertise within the department, but the minister can certainly appoint her technical advisors to look into this. I think that deals with the first speaker's questions. If you have any more, we'll be happy to answer them in the course of time during the committee stage or even after that, because we are open to any queries, and we would like to settle them before a bill becomes an act. So if there are any loopholes, we will gladly look at those and attend to them. As far as the second speaker is concerned, we in the Department of Housing have also had complaints about inspectors, and this is something which I believe and understand the NHBRC is dealing with. I think they have appointed a lot more, particularly in the outlying regions, and there might well have been a problem with inspectors arriving on time, and yes, this would cause problems if the house wasn't inspected when it should have been. I believe that the NHBRC is responsible for this, and they will have to ensure that their staff, including inspectors, are sufficiently able to deal with all the enrollments at the appropriate stage. But I agree, and I think we all do, that without inspections, this act is meaningless, and we do need the inspections so that it can be enrolled and covered as such under the act if the builder is unable to rectify the defect. And then the second question was the provincial housing department used to say the project not completed on time. Unfortunately, with building projects, wherever you are, no matter what the high efficiency builder might be or contractor might be, there are many delays during any project, and I think the bigger the project, the more likely there are to be delays. I'm talking about weather-related delays. One hears a lot in the press and the media about delays caused by lack of materials. The cement isn't always readily available, and yes, there are going to be delays, and often these delays are caused by social compacts in the area where people require additional stormwater drainage, whatever it might be. So all this tends to delay the project as a whole. And I don't think one can lay the blame entirely at the door of the provincial housing department, because although they also have inspectors out, this is really what I would call a pure NHBRC matter. They are there to look at the quality of the building. And for example, if a builder is late on every single assignment, he will either be spoken to severely or warned by the NHBRC that he is not complying with his time frame, and they can, in terms of the Act and regulations, they can take measures to either blacklist him or ensure he goes for additional training so he can deliver on time. So yes, this whole question of the time of delivery does rest to a large extent with the contractor. And I think we must all accept and understand that many of these emerging contractors haven't yet reached the stage where they can deliver everything on time, but we're hoping that with further training, ongoing training, which many of them are receiving, that they can fulfill their task and really be considered to be an expert builder in time to come, so that they can get more houses to build, because the NHBR often, I think invariably for an emerging contractor, they will be given one or two houses to start with, and that amount, that number will increase as and when they become more experienced and can fulfill their obligations autonomously, and not so that doesn't result in big time delays. And unfortunately, in the same project, you might have different emerging contractors on site. So one area of a contract might be finished well ahead of another, although they start at the same time. And this is also a result of the builder and possibly materials which are accessible, which he has to access. So yes, there are many scenarios which delay the larger contracts or projects. And I think the NHBRC has made a lot of ground in addressing the problems and having plans to actually resolve those problems at least expense and delay to the end user. So that's all I have to say on those questions.
But I'm not happy with your justification of delays in building. I think it is clear there is an agreement that journey, how is that being built? There needs to be partnership between those emerging contractors and contractors who are able to build housing. I don't think we'll continue having this kind of issues in the community with regards to the emerging contractors not able to build the housing on time. Because your Section 4H of the council says that the council starts establishing a category and criteria and expense of home builders. It is used and paid for building traffic and discourage first building traffic. That is implemented. It is not to be in paper. It is to see that in action. That is what we need to see now. To the movement. People cannot be made for them. It's critical that we establish companies that are able to build housing. And if we don't have that, there are best practices in other countries. We go out there and ensure that we bring best practices into South Africa. But South Africa does have best practices in South Africa. It's only that we are not harnessing it properly. And there is no way that we're going to continue listening to this as excuses. In fact, what we are saying in the committee is that inspection is not on the ground. We want energy to say you are saying inspection on the ground. We need to know from the National Department of Housing and the provincial department that when the foundation is in place, there are inspectors on the ground to ensure that that foundation is in place. So that kind of partnership we need to establish if there is partnership between the department and energy and the inspectors on the ground. And even the department themselves, the municipalities, should not remove their responsibility. So but at the end of the day, we don't want anybody to pass the buck, but we want to ensure that each foundation is being built. Because the foundation is again going to go back to square one. There's lots of remedy and work that needs to be done. Because of how the land is being constructed already. But everything how that is built from now onwards, from 2004, we have accredited the DNG process, and everything how that is built right now, we're not expecting what you see in anything to it. I think it's happening. If we can help that situation now after the DNG process. So I think we should not allow its members, because otherwise we're not helping government to deliver on the money. That's one thing. One aspect that we said that we wanted to go back to. Why we don't see the issue of inspection on the bills? So why is it silent on the matter of inspection? It does there, it is there in the end. But your bill is presented, it's silent on the issue of inspection. Because if we pass it without inspection on the bill, it means that we are not serious on the issue. That's one aspect of it. And the issue of ensuring that we support the money deficit creation. We should highlight those issues because we talking about recuperating the cost with money that is instead for the people. And if there's good work that is being done, definitely the homestead, the builder needs to ensure that they can get that amount of money. So at the moment, we just want to see if there is value in issue of the passing the Housing Consumer Act. We don't want to pass this bill if we're not, we feel that we're not ready with the mechanism that are put in place. We welcome the presence of NHGRC, CEO, and Kaupe, and the members of the committee, but please participate in the process. Because we would like to see a situation that is different on the ground, in a meaningful way. Members, we appreciate it.
Okay.
Chairperson, thank you. I just want to pick up on an issue that I raised earlier about the late enrollment. And I want to put forward a suggestion. One of the amendments is that the idea of the duty is being put on a conveyancer to ensure that a home builder is registered before attending to the registration of a bond. Is it not possible that one can do something similar? I mean, every single house that is built needs to be approved by a municipality. Should part of the application to the municipality not include some sort of evidence that an application has been made to NHBRC for enrollment before they approve the plan? That should cut out a lot of the late enrollment, I would imagine. Then, Chairperson, I think you've raised a number of questions as well as my colleague there that perhaps I'm not sure if it can be addressed in terms of really NHBRC side and inspections and so on. I mean, we see projects that supposedly have been managed and inspected by NHBRC. That there's lots of problems with. I don't think, and I need some guidance here, that it can be addressed in this particular bill, perhaps in the regulations, I don't know. but it's certainly something that we need to pick up with NHBRC. And then just lastly, Chairperson, is it possible, or first of all, the question is, people have been consulted in various organizations. Have their submissions been taken into consideration in the preparation of the amendments? If not, why not? And is it possible for us to get those submissions so that we can see what is interested parties out there, and I presume we're not going to have public hearings, Chair. We can see what their submissions were and whether, in fact, it has been taken into consideration and whether it's worth taking into consideration. Thank you.
There's something I don't understand. Really, I don't. You seem to be using these emerging contractors, and you claim that you are training them, but the mess that they are doing, and you are aware of it, that it's because of these emerging contractors. Is there anything that can be done? Yes, I know they are on the ongoing training, but still, you still call them emerging contractors. And you will bear with me, yeah, it is written here, they do. It's by the mystery in the book. Okay, that's it.
Yeah. Just one last one. There's mention, obviously, of registration of voters. I know that in the past, obviously, builders have been deregistered for various reasons. But they then merely form a company under another name, it's the same owners, and they apply for re-registration again. Is there some way, either in the regulations or in the Act, where one can in fact try and stop this type of practice?
I just wanted to confirm from the NHBRC to say to us, perhaps what things there may be a problem in terms of standards being awarded, not necessarily. Are all the emerging contractors that are building houses on the database? Because it is said that you create a particular category for people who have expertise to build houses. So we don't want to do it away by working as a committee. We don't want to make contractors. Not what you're saying. But what you are saying specifically. To ensure that the houses are built up, housing of quality, as you said that you want to build out of quality.
Yeah.
Is there a technique that when contractors are granted for people to build houses, that those contractors are the contractors in the database, and ensuring that there is a company in there that will be ensuring that a house will be of quality at the end of the day, while you take it on board the building contractor, but at the end of the day, there is a certainty that a particular contractor is there who knows about how to build houses. In the process, other people get training. Because at the end of the day, we don't out there people to say, we don't have to build houses. But at the end of the day, I think we owe it to our people to gain them quality houses.
Thank you, Chair. As far as the first speaker again, I take your point that, you know, if municipalities became more involved, maybe there would be fewer late enrollments, etc. I would like to ask Mr. McCarthy, I think he has the experience on the ground, what his council has, to talk on that dual inspection, because we have NHBRC inspectors, we have municipal inspectors, and some people say provincial inspectors, and all three of them are being supposed to do the same thing, or they actually do slightly different things. As far as consultations are concerned, we take your point. We will certainly finish the committee with a full set of the comments received. And in answer to the question, we have actually accommodated most of those comments. Some of them aren't even relevant, you know, but we will certainly let you have a copy of that in the next day or two. And then as far as the deregistration is concerned, the council has been aware for many years about what we call people who do these midnight trips and then start up somewhere else. as I understand it, Mr. Mukherjee will be able to confirm it, is that we go by ID numbers. So that if a builder who's working for ABC Builders decides to fill that up and start somewhere else with XYZ Builders, and he is still around, well then he'll have to submit his ID number and the system will pick that up for the duplication, and it will be, he will not be able to re-register. I think there are other ways of getting around it than the option loopholes, but I think it's not that he'll be in a better position to speak on that. And then the second speaker, well, I think that's really all. I think you dealt with some of the issues there. So may I ask Mr. Mahedi to just respond to those 2 points, please?
Thank you, Chairperson. My apologies for arriving late. I just want to deal with the 2 aspects. In terms of deregistration, yes, it would be very difficult for anybody to come back to the system because you identify them through the ID system. But of course, what is appearing in the market is that the guy is deregistered, he joins another company, he works for someone else, and to the housing consumer, that person is still running the business of construction. We sought senior counsel opinion on this, on whether we can deny a person access to work. We're told that constitutionally, you've deregistered him, he can join any other company and work for any other person. But through our database system, it is possible to stop that, and we have stopped it. Now, the challenge that I want to bring to the attention of the committee is inspection. NHGRC's challenge with inspection, unlike other countries, is that the country does not have an accredited inspector. We are working on a program where inspectors will work like chartered accountants. The challenge we have had in different presentations to provinces have been, you have got an NHGRC inspector, you have got a municipal inspector, you have got a provincial inspector, you have got a company inspector, a home builder inspector. Can't we have one role? Unfortunately, at the current moment, we do not have, as a country, such an accreditation system. But that's something that NHGRC is trying to work on, and see if in future we will have such an accredited system. In terms of inspectors on the ground, for the non-subsidy sector, it has been a challenge, but we have increased number of inspectors for the non-subsidy sector. For the subsidy sector, we have kept it at 500, one inspector for every 500 units, full-time, as opposed to the non-subsidy sector. It means this person will be on-site on a daily basis. That is his job in the subsidy sector. In the non-subsidy sector, it's 4 inspections per unit. With regard to the dual system, municipal involvement, we have also explored this issue. What municipalities do, they do an approval, and that approved plans come to the NHGRC. Our idea was, once you've got a final inspector, that final inspector will then give a final go-ahead. And we're hoping that once you've got this accredited inspector, we will then deal with the challenge of municipalities. Of course, interaction with municipalities is continuous. The certain municipalities make sure that properties are involved. With regard to the conveyances, it is in the Act that conveyances are supposed to ensure that before they transfer properties, those properties are registered with the NHGRC. But there has not been a penalty for conveyances that have been contravening the law. So part of the process is to ensure that then they can also face some penalties. With regard to untrained home builders, the problem is much bigger. Appointment of contractors is not done by the NHGRC, it's done by municipalities and provinces. Now, once this, our input into the appointment process is an enrollment registration certificate. We have got provisional enrollment and we've got full enrollment. So in terms of a provisional enrollment certificate, the builder will be given a certain number of units to build. Imagine all new builders. It's not only new builders, but these builders, your big contractors also subcontract, and that's where I think the challenge then emerges. And the change builders almost on a daily basis. They will be having a contract with national government or provincial department or municipality to build, but they subcontract. The responsibility for remedial work lies with the registered appointed builder, not with the subcontractor. Should we experience failure in those units, then the home builder, who's registered and who has enrolled the property, remains liable. The issue of training is continuous, and I'll say to the committee, I think over the weekend you've seen, we've gone again trying to get as many people participating in our training program. We have raised this matter with our builders, and we're still continuing to do it. Most of the builders are not bringing employees for training, and we are fishing for people to be trained. The last 2 weeks, we were here in the Western Cape on site on the M2 project, and we met with the builders that are untrained on site, and we had them to confront the main contractor and say, these people need to go through a training program. I think it's a gradual process. Late enrollment, as I entered, Mr. Fesha dealt with sufficient include late enrollment. But that remains a major challenge with big home builders. Smaller home builders do not have the money to can pay late inspection. But it's the big builders that are creating more problems because they've got the financial muscle to evade the NHBRC. How does it happen in practice? In terms of our system, if you enroll a property today, and you're saying you're going to build on the 30th of May. You find that on the 30th of May, the property is not yet built. It will only be built next year, 30th of May, because of a number of circumstances. So people change those dates. But in the subsidy sector, that is not happening because you've got greater access to the province and the municipality. If they are late, we'll know. In the non-subsidy sector, the challenge is you will not know when will the person have the money to go back on time. Our appeal through our code of conduct that I think has been circulated and distributed is that we want to take action against those builders that take advantage of housing consumers that miss their date of start. In terms of actual completion, there are a number of challenges there because sometimes the changes are done by home builders, sometimes changes are done by housing consumers. So there are a number of possibilities there. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. I think there may just have been a bit of a misunderstanding when I spoke about the municipality's role. I was specifically referring to something similar to what is in the Act for Conveyances, that the municipality should perhaps also have the duty, as part of the approval stage, that an application to NHBRC should form part of the approval of the plan. And that will do away with late enrollment, particularly by the bigger contractors, because they have to apply for approval to develop. So that was the one point there, rather than just some sort of cooperation in terms of inspections. Then there was mention made of the various inspectors, council, province, NHBRC, and then Petula mentioned they're looking towards a situation where they have a final inspector. Would that be one inspector that could take over the role of all four, the council, the province, NHBRC, or not? And then just in terms of, again, I realize subcontractors are a big problem because as a contractor, I apply for approval, I get it, and I then give a job to my friend over here who's going to do it for much less, and he's not approved. NHBRC is not aware of that. Should NHBRC, through the minister, and I'm talking particularly about subsidized housing, should there not be something, and I believe there is, in tender documents, if you're going to employ a subcontractor, you need to state in the tender document. And I think NHBRC should then be aware that there's a subcontractor in the application and are those subcontractors registered with NHBRC. Thank you, Chair.
One aspect, Mr. Petula, speaking about inspectors, I think you are speaking about what the members, we got one, we've gone to Cuba. When the citizens knew the protection of the people, they are saying even the infection, protection infection of the ground, is not too much for what we need. And I think what people are saying, they say the four infection, that is one for every state, one from the municipality, one from the province, whatever, they need to fix, look at one thing at a time. Because there's no criteria, which is, there's no common understanding of what is there to be settled in the community. What I'm hearing, that they are there, but they are being careful with the people. But if each one of them can have that one being consolidated into one, so that all of them, they know what to look at in the people's house. That's what I'm talking about. I don't know. It's all right up to you.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. The issue of an accredited inspector, we looked at the UK model, the Irish model, the Japanese model, and we also looked at the Canadian model. They do not have duplicate inspectors. They have one accredited, it's like an accountant. And the inspector will have, the accountant will have a code of ethics to comply with. Now, the future that we are envisaging is to have that one inspector. On an accredited program, where a person can go to school to qualify as an inspector, like you'll have a chartered accountant, like you'll have an engineer. That's what is lacking, and this is what is creating a gap. Now, in terms of cooperation, is about the current situation, because the process is going to be long. With regard to subcontractors, yes. In terms of the NHBR rules, a registered builder must subcontract registered home builders. And this is what needs to be continuously monitored on site. Why should the subcontractor be registered with the NHBRC? That gives the subcontractor free access to training because he's a registered member of the NHBRC. And the subcontractors can in that way develop into builders on their own right. That is the emphasis that we are putting on the ground in ensuring that we've got a larger pool in the long run of trained registered builders. In terms of the municipality, yes, I think the point now is clear to me. I think a municipality can play a role in terms of approval. Thank you.
One thing that I think we should highlight in the process, that every single employee who gets into a particular project should be trained. This is a compulsory. That if a builder, subcontractor gets people to go work in a particular building, there should be a training center where you don't have to be trained. So that people to go back there to be trained. You identify your workers and so forth, they get employed, but they should go undertake training in the process. Even if they work or they get trained even after hours, but they should become trained. Because one of the things that we are repeat at the foot of the employees, you know nothing about the limits of house. Members, are there any other things? I think we've dealt with all the issues, but I don't want to silence you on these issues, because I think we are going to pass a bill. This is the understanding that we are passing a bill that we are
Chairperson, you've spoken about passing the bill. You've also mentioned in your opening remarks about us having to report as a committee, I think, by the 7th. Can you just outline the process forward from here for us as a committee to get towards where we're going to be passing the bill?
Yes. I think one of the things that was happening was that, especially when we got our people advisor, said that in terms of the bill as it stands, there are no major settlements on this group. But there are issues that we are raising. And I think the issues that we are raising so far, the issues of practicality, of ensuring that we have quality housing that can be done. None of the issues that we have raised, remember, is that I think they increase the process of having the bill as it stands. I don't know. Unless, because the issue that we're hammering on is the issue of infection and the quality control. the issue of contractors, the subcontractors. We are saying that the employees must be paid. But those are the ongoing issues to be engaged with the department, both the provincial and the national department. So that is the issue that we have to deal with when we meet with the department tomorrow. But in terms of the period, I don't concern maybe about the process is the cost that we have to do. Something like this, the process. Some members, do you have any other thing that you think we should do? Because we thought it was well researched on the side of the committee, but we thought that there are issues that we just need to highlight. But in the essence, we have the question.
Chair, thank you very much. Chair, I'm just a little bit concerned. I think I've raised two issues here that need to be addressed in the bill in some way or another. The one was the capping of the final settlement. And the other one, which I think Petula agreed to, is some form, and I don't know if it can be done in regulation or if in fact it should be part of the Act, is the role of the municipality in terms of part of the approval of plans, that there should be an NHBRC application. Those are the two. The thing that's more important to me that bothers me a bit is, first of all, I wasn't aware that this was going to be on the agenda today. And I'm concerned about our as a committee, our process with the stakeholders. We haven't consulted stakeholders as a committee. And it's one of the reasons I asked for the submissions from the stakeholders that the department has consulted with. So I have a great concern that if we were to cast this as it is here today without consulting with stakeholders as a committee. Thank you, Chair.
I was just asking about what would be the use now to get those submissions, because you said you want to see whether the department has taken into consideration, by the weight of Mr. Tresha, they have taken some of the issues. Then now we wanted only to ascertain whether those issues have been taken on as the committee. Then I think if we pass it today, then it will be relevant where do we want those issues to be brought up.
The issues that you are raising are two. Thanks, the shaping of the Pana settlement. Let's hear from them what they can say about that. The role of the municipality, which we agree. Even the shaping of the Pana settlement, we agree. I don't think there's no discussion to it. But by the look of things, to us, the thing was a straightforward thing. It's a bill that is there that just introducing an amendment to the new bill altogether. And in terms of the public hearing, they did conduct many stakeholders that didn't contract it. Public hearing, what people would they say right now? Before you respond, this one is easier.
I think it's important that the capping might be as a result of a big meeting. I would like to ask Mr. Marchetti what the NHBRC is doing about capping. We're talking about the claim against the NHBRC. And I think there was discussion before you arrived about whether these should be capped or have they been capped. And if you could meet on that point.
Okay, the capping is done in the regulation. For example, council has the authority in terms of the regulations to either move beyond the 500. So it's done in the regulation, the cap of the amount that can be paid. It's not in the Act, it's done in the regulation as a way of implementing the Act. And I think sitting at $500,000 for now. But there are circumstances in terms of the regulation where council can go beyond $500,000. Depending on the needs of the housing consumer and the structural defect. The issue of municipalities, I think, is a matter that can also be taken care in the regulations. If we state in the regulations clearly
that municipalities should do the following before giving an approval as a practical application of the Act. So the issue of having mentioning it in the bill of say municipalities like we've done with conveyances, introducing it at that level, I'm not sure if it will create much of a difficulty. Like we have conveyances and inspectors in the Act. The only challenge we had was that we did not have penalties for the conveyances. Now if we want to put in penalties for the municipalities, then we might have to add a clause that deals with penalties against municipalities. But this is about municipalities just playing a role as part of corporate governance. I think we can mention that municipalities need to take that in the regulations, not in the Act. So those would be my inputs on the two issues. The capping is there in the regulations in terms of expenditure, the amount of money that can be paid to a builder when we are either circling or when we are undertaking remedial work, and it's sitting at $500,000. But I know council is reviewing that $500,000. Because, you know, if you have it in the Act, the challenge is every time you need to make a change, then you need to come to Parliament, and that creates the inflexibility. And I think if it's in the regulation, and the regulations give council the opportunity to look into the situation and take a decision, I think it suffices for now.
So, yes, thank you. I accept the comments from Petula regarding the capping and the municipality. I still have a concern, though, Chairperson, that, and we don't necessarily need public hearings, but we as a committee are, I think, obliged to request from the public and the consumers. If I look at the people that this has been sent to by the department, they specifically sent it to these organizations. We haven't gone through a process where we've asked consumers to comment on this. And after all, it's a consumer's protection bill. I don't know why there's that rush, Chairperson, to approve this bill today. Particularly in light of the fact that as committee members, I certainly wasn't aware that we're going to have this bill before us today and be expected to approve it. Now, the agenda indicated the Cuba report and the minutes, Chairperson. In fact, I don't have an agenda that even said where the meeting was going to be held. I just have had a draft that I received last week.
There you are.
It's
okay to do that. It's public here. We invite on our own, on our junior together, not to everybody. Okay? I can understand your concern on the consumer, because there's lots of consumers who want to talk about it. Nobody don't care. We do care. What then will happen? Because you cannot say when the party is calling for that only, no. We'll allow that problem. But then it means that, I don't know, can we hear from the department why was the rush? Why they wanted, what is the problem? Why they want to so that we can understand the challenge they're facing, so we can.
Yeah, this bill has been a long time in coming in the making, and you know, I think that the longer that you leave it, the more problems will accumulate, and as you are aware, we have a pretty heavy legislative program this year, and the reason is twofold. One is that I think it's important that these things get, because this is also holding up the new regulations, because the regulations can't be finalized until the bill is being finalized. Mm. There is this urgency from that point of view, from and also, I will certainly send you all the comments that you received by no later than tomorrow or the following day for the overnight courier, you'll have it here by Friday. And I don't think you'll find that there's going to be anything that's really major at all that we have a bit from that, you know, that is doable. I just have one concern though while I'm speaking, and that is I'd like Mr. Huyn's confirmation. I think we're going to have a problem with the municipality who put that into regulations, because then I think they'd have a definite comeback against it, wouldn't they?
Yeah, I don't think that in regulations, in from national legislation that you can impose such duties on these parties, but in light of the constitutional obligation of self governance, the National Housing Department through the structures can then give direction for want of a better word to the municipalities, then requesting them to do this as part of the process of housing.
All right. Thank you very much. Okay. In the light of the request for us to go on public hearing, I don't think there's actually on public hearing here. I think the department must allow the committee its process. We won't say whether we want a public hearing or not. Let's go to a committee so that we can get to do ourselves. After which then we go to the issues of public hearing. We remember that is an agreement. I'm not objecting to this thing, but I'm just thinking I just want to get things done in terms of the regulation. Yes, sir.
Perhaps the faithful advisor can also just give an indication. If we don't actually follow that route as a committee, we just publicly just ask for comments. We don't actually have public hearings, but we need to put out advertisements and ask for comments from the public at large. Now, if we fail to do that as a committee, is that not one of the constitutional requirements for legislation? Thank you.
This is a very difficult question.
Very difficult.
I've read those two cases. And very ambivalent to the degree that one act or one bill was passed, the fact that we weren't probably getting to the change, and the others weren't. So it depends on the portfolio committee and whether the bill itself, whether the bill really requires, but that there must be a degree of consultation that is affecting in the light of those cases, and it could have consequences on human consequences if one don't think about that at least.
Thank you very much. Okay, what then will happen? We should have a meeting again with the department getting through the bill, and then we will discuss among ourselves what we can take on our own, and then agreement. We're not going to agree with the financial aid to body on our own way. Find the way out. But thank you for your time, Mr. Martin. Thank you for your time. And let me attend again. Most unfortunate members of the committee must be known that we can talk about what is going to be done. But thank you for your time. Oh, one thing I wanted to ask, Mr. while you are here. What happened to this slide by 9? You go into people's houses, but they run away with people's money. And they can report them to you. Because those are children.
Yes, Chair.
You go from one person to another, building houses. In the process, drop people's money and run away to another problem.
Chairperson, those are the people that need to be caught and be arrested. Because we have, in the non-subsidy sector, we pay inspectors for finding people that are not registered and for people that are not enrolled in properties. And once we catch them, then we interdict them. We stop construction. But it's really in the public interest to make sure that it doesn't happen. Yes.
Thank you very much.
Yes.